bringing more positivity to your day and bringing more positivity to your life. KLLP Blackfoot, KGTM Shelley. It's Lifestyle with Phoenix Cannon. Brought to you by Bella Nicole Mental Health Services on the Best Mix, Star 98.
If you didn't know, this month is Child Abuse Prevention Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which I think is very important to address today. And so I have somebody here that I think is perfect to share their story, and I think she's so brave for being here. Her name's Rana Herrera. She's 17 years old, and she actually has experience with both of these things, child abuse prevention, sexual assault awareness. And so I wanted to bring her on, and I hope that you all can get something from this, because the purpose of the show is to improve the community and to motivate and inspire and bring hope. And so I hope at the end of this, we can find hope, but we're going to have to slog through some of the past to get there. And when I was hearing Raina's story, it's not an easy story to hear. So I just want to warn you that it's not a super easy story to hear, but it is important. And I hope that you can learn and grow from this experience and hopefully be able to help somebody else through their experience as well. So Raina, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being brave enough to tell your story. I know that that's not always an easy thing. And so you are just one of a kind for being able to be here. And I kind of want to just jump right into your story. Can you tell me what your experience with domestic violence and child abuse is?
Well, my mother was in a relationship for like 7 or 8 years, and he was very abusive. They were both abusive to each other, physically, mentally, everything. Mm-hmm. One day he decided to hold my mom and my little sister hostage for 3 days. And then my sister had went to school that day, and he just tried to kill her, and he just beat her. And,
wow.
You know, he really got my mom down.
Wow, that is terrifying. So you witnessed all of this, but this was not your father. It was just a person that was entered into your life, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened after this? So you said that he tried to kill your mother, and what happened after that?
Well, Tristan, she came and she helped, and she played a really big role model to me and like my sister and my mother as well. She helped my mom get through her future and just the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
My mother she was a completely different person. She changed, and she wasn't herself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very traumatized, and she still is. We're still, you know, learning how to process that and learn how to deal with it in a good way.
So how old were you when all this happened?
I was 12.
12 years old. Wow. Can you take me back to some of those moments? I know that you were telling me something about like a frying pan, and there were some other incidences like that. Would you be willing to share?
Yes. Well, so it was a Friday morning. My sister had went to school, because finally the man, my mom's boyfriend, he went to sleep, and he wasn't able to, you know, tell them that they can't go to school, like my mom can't leave or whatever. And so my sister went to school, and she was very traumatized and very hurt, and she didn't know what to do because she was so young, so she didn't go and try to get help.
And she was traumatized, and this was from the hostage situation that
yes,
she was traumatized?
Okay. Yes, and like just witnessing my mother get beat for 3 days straight.
Wow.
My mother got beat with a bat. My mom got suffocated, choked out, punched, and just everything in the book you can name. He had boarded up the windows and stuff, actually, and he was, I think his plan was, I'm 95% sure that he was committed to killing my mother.
Mm.
My mom, she had nothing to fight back with. She didn't have, like, a gun, she didn't have a knife or, like, anything to help her, but the only thing that she had was a frying pan that was on the stove with food in it.
Wow.
Yeah, and she fought back with it, and she just hit him, and I think he got knocked out, and she finally, like, since the doors and stuff were all locked up, she had to break the front window and jump out of the front window. And I actually saw that a couple days, like a week, I think, after that. I had went back to the house to go get some of my mother's belongings, and I saw the broken window, and there was just, you know, blood everywhere and it food everywhere. And you could see the pan, it was dented.
Wow. Wow. And so was your sister able to escape?
Yeah, because she was at school, and this all happened, you know, that Friday morning when he tried to kill her. So it was, I think it was like barely not even 12. I think that this like had all went down. It was still very early. And we didn't know anything until, you know, the cops came and talked to us. But yes, my sister was, I'm just glad that she didn't have to see that part. That part would have been very bad, because what if he killed my mom? And, you know, what if my sister was there left alone? What would he do to her, you know?
Mm-hmm. How old was your sister?
She was like 8 or 9.
So she was little. Yeah. So where were you these 3 days that they were being held hostage? And did you know that they were held hostage?
No, I was actually living with my stepmother and my father, but my father was in jail for a while. And so I actually went to go live with them because my mother, the way that she treated us and the way she chose a man over us. And so I was living with them for a while, and I was living with my stepmom, and I was at school. I was at a school dance, and, you know, my teachers pulled me out, and they had lots of cops in the front office. And I'm like, what I do? Like, what I do? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to fight nobody or anything. Mm-hmm. And so they pulled me in, and they, you know, told me, like, hey, do you know this man? And I'm like, yeah, that's my mother's boyfriend. And they're like, well, your mother's currently, you know, in the hospital. She's has multiple injuries. We're going to take you to a safe place until, like, you know, your mother's fine. And wow, we're going to get through this. And they're very supportive.
Wow. How did you feel when you heard all that? Was that just terrifying?
Honestly, it was terrifying, but it wasn't new. I kind of expected it because the way that he beat my mom for so many years and just all the trauma my mom had went through and she put me and my little sister through and all the abuse, I was kind of just like, you know, well, that's too bad. But, you know, and the first thing I actually told her when I saw her was, you know, you did this to yourself, which is not very supportive. But as a child, I didn't really know what to say except for my thing that came to brain, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also said that you were a victim of child abuse. Did you want to talk anything about that?
Yeah, my mother, actually, she beat me and my little sister for a long time, actually, when she was with that man, because, you know, she chose him over us, and every time she would give us, like, too much attention, or if we did, like, one little thing, he would be like, go hit your kid, and my mom would come and hit us, and, you know, like, one time, like, he wouldn't let me eat dinner or anything. And he like kept on making my mom come back to the back room, you know, keep hitting me and beating me. And, you know, like, I've always had, when I was little, we always had welts on our butts and stuff like that from the belt and stuff. So
She
just did what he had asked her, and she did it. And she didn't, I know she felt bad afterwards, because, you know, afterwards she would do that. She would sneak us in the kitchen and get us food. And she would, you know, be like, I'm so sorry. Like, you can't cry like that because it makes him mad. So
that is absolutely terrifying. And after this whole incident, did she finally separate from this man? And were you kind of separated from that situation?
Yes. She completely left him. He went to jail for a while. He went for a long time, but they wanted my mom to testify, actually, but she wasn't strong enough. She wasn't brave enough. She didn't have the strength. She was still recovering. You know, we're still recovering. It's something that we don't even like to talk about in the house sometimes, because it's just hard.
Yeah.
But I think that it definitely needs to get out there. And I hope that parents can understand that their actions can be affecting their children and their children's future.
100%. Thank you so much for that message. And I hope that there's been a lot of healing for you. When we come back, I want to talk more about the healing process that Reyna has gone through here on Lifestyle. I'm here with Reyna Herrera. She has been sharing her story of child abuse and domestic violence. And I appreciate how honest and open she has been, because that's really the only way that we can bring awareness to this, the realities that are happening right here in our own communities. So if you didn't hear it, go back to the last segment. You can always listen back to the story on our podcast, Lifestyle with Phoenix, and listen to some of the incidents that happened. She shares some specifics with us. But it's been about 5 years, I think, since that incident. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you feel like you've found some hope, some healing, some progress in your life since then?
Yes, most definitely.
So how have you healed, and what hope have you found?
You know, just one thing I keep in mind is don't let that be your lifestyle in your future. Mm-hmm. Look for the signs and look for all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. I would assume that your mother reported it because the police came. And when that happened, is that when the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center stepped in?
Yes. I'm pretty sure my mother was hiding under a truck.
Oh, wow.
Because I guess the cops and the ambulance were, you know, trying to get her up. But she wouldn't. She was really, really scared because, you know, she's covered in blood and she can't see and she just doesn't know what's going on. And she just escaped. So that's when they called Tristan from Domestic Violence, and she came and got my mom.
Well, and you said that she couldn't see. I don't think we heard that part of the story. Why couldn't your mom see?
Because of how big her eyes were and, like, close shut. They were bruised and just bloody everywhere, bruised, and just it was horrible, horrible, horrible. You couldn't even recognize who my mother was. Like, if you saw her in a store, you would obviously look at her, but you wouldn't know that that's my mother.
So you saw her in that state?
Yes, I did.
I feel like this would bring a lot of trauma to, of course, her, but also to you and your sister. How have you coped with that?
I don't even know. I don't know. We've coped with it, like, by being, you know, supportive and just being ourselves and, like, understanding that, you know, things happen in life.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't choose who our parents are. We can't choose how our parents act. Mm-hmm. I think we're very mature.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we cope with it. Yeah. We're very mature. That made us mature. That made us, you know, grow up and
become an advocate for others, really.
Yes.
Well, so when the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center came, what happened after that? Did your mother get taken? Did you get taken? Did they help you? Did they give you some resources?
Yes, they put us in a safe house, actually. We were there for a long time, a while, I think like a month or two. You know, we spent Christmas there, and they gave us a Christmas, and someone donated a car to us, and finally my mom got back up on her feet, and she got an apartment, and it was all from the help from the Domestic Violence Center. They helped us. Like, if it wasn't for them, we would still be in a situation right now that my mother put herself in, you know.
Mm-hmm. So they gave you a safe house. They gave you some other resources to get back on your feet. Were you then sent back to live with your stepmom, or are you living with
No, him? Actually, I wasn't. I had to stay with my mother because he was on the run. He ran away.
Oh.
And I couldn't leave because he had threatened to kill my mother and my sister and me. And so if I'm out, you know, walking freely, and he's walking out loose, and he sees me, then, like, he said that he's going to kill us, so I had to stay in the house. We had to stay in the house, and my mother didn't want me to go back because my father was in jail, so I stayed with my mom through the whole process.
Wow. That's a lot of responsibility for
Yeah.
a young girl to have, and also terrifying. I mean, I just, how did you not just live in fear every moment? How did you continue on with your life?
I did live in fear for a long time. I think that this first 2 years is where the healing has begun, and my strength, knowing that I can walk and be able to, you know, be aware of my surroundings, you know.
So what made the difference for you? What made you transition from being fearful to now being, it seems like you're just very confident. I mean, you're here talking about it. You have been very strong through this whole thing, reliving some very terrible things. What made the difference to you in these past couple of years where you're just kind of seizing your life, taking it back and moving forward?
Maturity, and I have a future ahead of myself. I have my own future. I have things to live for. I have a beautiful sister mm-hmm. that I look after, and yeah. I got to do it for her.
So did somebody help you through this? Was there a therapist? Was there a leader? Was there somebody that guided you or led you? Or was it really just yourself that you just kind of came to this realization, like, I'm going to seize my life back?
It was definitely myself.
Mm. Wow. That's wonderful. That's truly inspirational. So what message do you want to share with others as far as from your perspective, from your story, anything that you've learned or you want other people to learn from this?
Don't let your actions be the cause of your children's, you know, future and trauma and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely think about their futures and think about what they deserve. And, you know, just understanding that kids, you know, they go through stuff a lot every day. They're horrible stuff, and we deserve better.
You do.
The community deserves better. Women and men and children, we all deserve better. We all need to be kind to each other.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's such a powerful, powerful message. Thank you so much for that message and for sharing with us, because I completely agree. And hopefully this is a pillar of light to those of you, if anybody is suffering through that or has suffered, that you know that there's hope, there's healing, that you can move forward. And we're going to talk about a little bit about how you can do so when we come back here on Lifestyle. I hope you heard Raina's incredible and inspirational story. She shared this very specifics of domestic violence and some of her child abuse experiences that happened very recently in her life. She still is a child. So she comes here to tell that story, to bring the message, which I love, that our actions should not be the cause of trauma to a child or to really anybody, right? We're spreading kindness today. And we've also invited Tristan Kerr. She's an advocate at the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center. We're bringing awareness to Sexual Assault Month and also Child Abuse Prevention Month. And I wanted to talk with you, Tristan, about some of these ways that, first of all, the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center can help those who have suffered from abuse and violence.
There's a lot of things that we do to help when our clients come into the center. You know, we help them recognize the behaviors of domestic violence or child abuse or sexual assault. You know, we help guide them along the way to the hope, the healing process, giving them the resources that can help them through that. You know, support groups, counseling, you know, there might be financial things that come up that maybe us at the center can help. And if there's something that us at the center can't help, we will definitely find that resource that will help that family or that client through their journey.
And I was listening to a presentation that they gave yesterday, and it sounds like you have trained professionals there, because a lot of these domestic violence situations, also there also is sexual abuse, and it's kind of, they come in hand a lot. And you have trained professionals there that can help in those type of situations, right?
We absolutely do. You know, we have forensic interviewers that are trained to do interviews with children, even adults who are in DV or child abuse situations. You know, you also have teen dating violence or sexual assaults that happen. Mm-hmm. We also have trained forensic nurse examiners who can do exams for domestic violence and sexual abuse and sexual assault.
And I think that's an incredible service that you offer, unfortunately, very needed. Another thing that I was noticing at this presentation is they're kind of like the mantras of these four pillars that you guys teach about, which is, I don't know if I'm getting this in the right order, but recognizing domestic symptoms of domestic violence, reporting it, preventing it, stopping it, right? So I kind of want to jump into those and kind of expound on each of those, starting with probably recognizing it. How do we recognize symptoms of domestic violence in maybe our coworkers or our loved ones or, you know, students or whatnot?
So one of the first things that you will probably see is jealousy. Mm. They become jealous of your children. They become jealous of you going to work and creating relationships with your coworkers, going and hanging out with your friends, going to be with your family. So it would start with the jealousy, and then they start to kind of isolate you from that. You know, causing arguments like they don't want you to go to work, or they don't want you to go to family functions. They don't want you to go hang out with friends. That's how it can start out. They isolate you. They might call you names.
So these are some things that we can recognize in like a partner or somebody that we live with or somebody that's close to us that we might start thinking like, oh, is this domestic violence or domestic abuse or mistreatment, right? I think those are good things because sometimes we let those slip by. We just kind of think, oh, it's them or maybe I did something. And if we start noticing a pattern here, I think that that's really important.
Yeah.
As far as what if our coworkers walk in or something like that? What if we notice something? I don't know. Is there something that we should keep an eye on if we notice them isolating themselves? Like, have they been victims of this or a student? Or if we notice a teacher notices a bruise or whatnot, is there a way that we can address that with the person?
You can, you know, pull them aside and say, hey, are you doing okay? I just kind of know you're kind of off. They may open up to you and they may not. You know, if you're starting to notice a change or recognize signs that there could be domestic violence, as adults, you can give them the resources to reach out to our center or call the national hotline for a center close by. But it ultimately comes down, we can't force them to do anything, but we can give them the guidance in order to get the help and help them recognize it.
Well, and I was curious about that because I've seen a couple of people where, and I've heard of situations where somebody is very obviously to other people being abused, but yet when they are approached, they say, no, 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 it's fine. And I think a lot of that comes out of fear. But I've heard that the domestic violence center cannot step in unless they ask for help. Is that true?
You know, we have law enforcement who will refer clients over to us. We have courts that refer clients over to us. You know, we can reach out and lend a hand and say, hey, we're here. We're here to support. We're here to help. You know, we open up those doors. But, you know, all we can do is help families that call in and say, hey, I have a situation. I think this is going on with my daughter and my grandchildren. How can I get them help? What do I need to do? And we just tell them, you know, here's some things you can do. This is how you can talk to them about it. You can send them our way. But we cannot make them. You know, they have to be willing. And most of the time when it's reported, it's not the first time. Not the third time. It's not the fifth time sometimes. Usually it's reported by someone else who hears or sees it. So, you know, it could be something that happens, like a neighbor hears it and reports it. Your family sees it. They report it. There is that constant fear because if I tell, what could happen next?
So I guess in one way that is relieving. So you could report something, say, I heard this. I have suspicions my neighbor is, you know, being domestically violated or abused, and law enforcement could show up and domestic violence center could show up and just kind of scout it out. But then you're saying the next steps of finding that healing, coming, finding a safe house and stuff will only happen if that person complies, if they want to leave the situation, right?
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. We can't force them. Now, child abuse is completely different. That has to be reported. You know, everybody in the state of Idaho is a mandated reporter, grandparent, daycare worker, school teachers, parents. You know, if it comes down to child abuse, that has to be reported, you know, because they're minors. You know, they can tell themselves. But when it ultimately comes down to it and you know it, you should be reporting it.
Well, thank you so much. That is a powerful message as well. We're going to wrap up this segment in just a couple minutes, talking about how you can do so and how you can report when we come back here on Lifestyle. We have a couple minutes left here with Treston Kerr. She's an advocate at the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center. We are having her, and we had Raina Herrera on here to tell her story for April because it is Child Abuse Prevention Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Now, we kind of talked a little bit about how to recognize the symptoms of domestic violence, child abuse, and also a little bit about how to report it. Do you have any information or any suggestions on how we can prevent and how we can stop some of this domestic violence from happening?
Recognizing the signs of domestic violence or child abuse, reporting it to the authorities, providing support to your victims or survivors is huge. Because the more support they can have, the better the outcome they probably will have. Mm-hmm. You give them a hand and they're not in this alone. Learning to show respect to others in relationships. Mm-hmm. Taking care of you emotionally, mentally, finding healthy relationships. Granted, the controlling or the domestic violence.
I love that you said about being that person yourself. That's the change. Like saying no to, if you have some inclination to hurt someone, or if you have anger or something, watch out for yourself first. Like, make sure that you're not part of the problem. Make sure that you are taking care of those emotional needs that you have, managing your anger, managing your emotions, taking, if it comes to getting therapy or taking that medication that you need so that you're not part of that problem, learning ways to cope with your own emotions and maybe past trauma as well, I think is such a huge part of this. You also mentioned being a support to others. So what are some ways that we can be a support to others? How can we help the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center or donate or help in different ways?
So we do take... you can volunteer at our center to help with some of our fundraising events that we do throughout the year. You can donate through our website. There are links on there. We have a bunch of events that are coming up here within June. We have the Mighty at 90 car show that's coming up on June 8th. That's going to be a fundraiser. And then we also have on June 29th, Scooper Bowl. That's mm-hmm. going to be down by the river. You come, you pay to eat as much ice cream as you want. And part of those proceeds are going to come to the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center as well. Also in August, we have the War Bonnet Rodeo coming up. And on August 1st, we are partnering with Man Up Crusade. And we will be raising funds that evening at the rodeo. And we encourage everybody to wear purple that night. If you know somebody who needs help, you can go to our website. You can go to our Facebook. You can stop into our office. You can call us. We have a crisis line for after hours and during our business hours.
So as far as donations, I know you said that you might need some donations. And of course, monetary donations always help. Supporting those events always helps. Are there any in-kind donations that people might have that they could bring that you need for shelters or anything like that?
Yep, you could definitely look on the website for that.
Well, you said that you have the office, a website, Facebook, a phone line. So can we hear some of those? Where are you located?
We are located at 1050 Memorial Drive in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Our office phone number is 208-529-4352. Our crisis line number is 208-235-2412. And our website is dvsacac.org.
And then on Facebook and social media, you are
The Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center.
The Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Center. I truly appreciate you being here. I truly appreciate Raina being here, sharing her story, sharing her message. And of course, we want to leave this with the hope. So I want to know from you, Raina, if somebody is suffering right now from domestic violence, child abuse, or they have in the past and they just haven't addressed it, what message would you say to them?
Get the help before it's too late, you know. Do it for yourself. Do it if you have kids. Do it for your future.
Yes, thank you. Because you do have a future, and that is the message of hope. There is a future, and it can change. It doesn't have to be like your past. It doesn't have to be like your present. It can be new. It can be fresh. It can be what you want it to be. And if you know somebody that is suffering from domestic violence, or you suspect it, or if you yourself are, again, that crisis line is 208-235-2412. And that website is dvsacac.org. Thank you so much. And again, you can share this with somebody. You can re-listen to this on our podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts, at Lifestyle with Phoenix. Thank you guys so much for joining. That was so powerful, inspirational, motivational, and touching. I truly appreciate your bravery. And thank you all for listening to another episode. We will catch you next time here on Lifestyle with Phoenix.